Welcome to Whiskey with Witcher. I'm Tim.
And I'm Valerie. And this is a podcast where we drink whiskey and talk about the Netflix TV series The Witcher.
Spoiler alert! While each episode of our podcast directly correlates with an episode of the show, we will be discussing the series as a whole.
And we'll be mentioning things from the games, books, and other pieces of Witcher IP. Although, we'll do our best not to spoil any major potential plot points.
You have been warned!
So, Tim, it's time for the most important question of the podcast. What are we drinking?
We're now about three quarters of the way through the first season, and I wanted to change things up a bit. So this week, we're drinking Kikkori, a Japanese whiskey that first emerged on the scene about 6 years ago, maybe. It's distributed by So Spirits and produced in Kumamoto. I believe I said that right.
It sounded right to me.
Yeah. On the island of Kyushu in Japan, Kikkori is most notable for the fact that it's distilled 100% from rice grown in the region. So why did I choose this whiskey to accompany this episode? Well, it's for a few reasons. Kikkori is inspired by a Japanese folktale about an ancient woodsman named Bisu who wanders the forest for centuries, which on the surface bears some similarities to our man Geralt of Rivia. More than that, though, Bisu's story is all about finding the perfect balance in life, and the idea of keeping the natural ecology in balance comes up more than a few times in the story this episode is based on. But really, more than anything else, I chose Kikkori for its distinctive gold color. It really stands out, I think. And it makes Kikkori a fitting whiskey to pair with this episode and all its talk of Gold Dragon.
Tim, I'm very impressed with how diligently researched this whiskey is.
We do try to do our homework. And it's funny, though, because I think before we get into actually talking about the episode, I have a little bit more to say about this whiskey. And I'm not just saying this so we're putting off our summary, but I'm saying it because I told you when I was going to pick a whiskey for this episode, I was looking for one with dragon in the name. Like, that was the plan.
Yeah.
Like, to do some sort of, you know, there's a distillery out there that's called Dragon Distillery, and I tried getting a whiskey from them, but just, you know, they're on the other side of the country, and I just wasn't able to get one. There aren't any whiskeys that I'm aware of that have dragon in the name. There's a lot of wines. If we were doing a wine podcast, we would have had a whole sort of, you know, options to choose from. And so ultimately, I ended up on Kikkori, like I said, because of the color. And I think that's kind of a nice parallel to how I see this episode, which is, you know, I was expecting one thing and was excited for one thing and ended up with something very different from that. That is exciting, I guess, in different ways, but is not what I was expecting it to be.
Well, so. I'm intrigued to hear more as we drink and discuss the episode.
Yeah.
So cheers, Tim.
Thank you. It's your turn to do the summary, right?
It is my turn to do the summary.
Did you bring notes?
Of course I brought notes.
Oh, gosh.
Every time, man.
You were an A student, weren't you?
Sometimes. Not always. If I was motivated enough to be one.
Oh, okay.
All right. So you ready?
Yes.
I'm going to summarize the episode.
Dragons.
Dragons! Dragon hunt. Okay. Geralt and Nyaskir are recruited by Borch 3 Jackdaws, who is totally not a dragon, you guys, and his warrior companions, Taya and Vea, to join their team as they hunt for a dragon in the mountains. Other teams are also a part of this hunt, including one that Yennefer is on. We meet a bunch of side characters, hard truths are learned, and Yennefer breaks up with Geralt, who then breaks up with Nyaskir. Her sweet kiss is composed, and it is a bop. Meanwhile, Dara is doing a lot of the heavy lifting in the Dara-Siri friendship, and saves her yet again, this time from Doppler Mousak, before Dara then goes ahead and breaks up with Siri. There's a lot of breakups in this episode, which I've got to say at this point is totally fair. I'm kind of team Dara and all this. So that's the gist of the episode thus far.
Interesting. I feel like you and I are going to have some disagreements on this
one. Oh, we're going to have so many, and it's going to be great. So let's talk about the episode.
All right. Let's preface by saying, and you know this, I am a big dragon fan.
Yeah.
Like, I love dragons. For those who don't know, I have a dragon tattooed on my back. And I think one of the reasons I'm a big fantasy fan in general is because I just think dragons are fucking awesome. So I was really, really excited for this episode when I saw it. And, you know, and what's really interesting to me is I think the first time I watched The Witcher all the way through and I was thinking about episodes I loved, like this one was near the top of my list. And I feel like with each time I've watched it, it's kind of dripped down a little bit lower. And now even to the point where I think the last time we recorded our podcast, I said, I said, oh, I love next week's episode. Well, I've rewatched it twice in prepping for this recording. And I think like now it's gotten to a point where I don't know. There are things I love about the episode, and then there are things I hate about it. And it is definitely, you know, it's a problematic one for me in quite a few ways.
Intriguing.
You know, yeah. I mean, it starts off great. Like you know, if we want to like kind of talk about it chronologically, like the opening is perfect. Like when I remember when I was watching it and they're like, you know, so the dragon has shown up in this kingdom and yeah. I want you to join me on the, I'm like, oh my God, this is the one for me. I was so excited. And especially when you get the different groups and you find out they're all like, you know, going to be hunting and it's kind of like a competition of who will be the one to slay the dragon. I'm like, this sounds fun. This is like what I was like hoping for more of when I like was watching started watching a show about a monster hunter, but it quickly gets away from that.
Well, I have to say, talking about the beginning, I do really love Borch, Tay, and Vea. Super fun.
Yes, I like them. No,
super badass.
Yeah, yeah. No, I have nothing but good things about those three characters. I love all three of them.
And I love at the beginning, too, we see my boy Yaskir composing the start of her sweet kiss.
Mm-hmm.
So he's working on the song, which becomes the Geralt and Yennefer theme musically throughout the episode.
That's
and
then very
the credit scene at the end. Yeah.
Yeah. But it starts with him like composing it. Like that's like the first thing you hear while they're waiting for Geralt to emerge from that cave where he's hunting something. I can't remember what it is. It's not important.
It's not important.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, and then he meets Borch three jackdaws.
Three jackdaws.
That is a hell of a name.
Yeah. They get into it more in the book, like what that's about.
But. Yeah. Yeah. And then Taya and Vea, who in the book are described as Zarakanian, but and I'm assuming they are in the show as well, but they're never referred to as that.
Are they not? I thought they were.
Oh, maybe they are. I don't
really. I don't know. When we get further into my notes, I'll let you know.
if I wrote it down. Yeah. I don't know. I don't recall them saying that they're Zarakanian, but like
have it phonetically written out. They are in the show. They're called Zarakanians.
That's from the show.
That is from the show.
Okay. Yep. All right. I don't remember that, but I'll trust you.
Now, is Zarakania a country or a continent? Do we know in the world of Witcher?
I don't know, because none of the books are set in Zarakania or whatever. It's not set there. And I don't know of any part of the game that's set there either. Certainly not the third game. I don't think either of the first two ones are. But you get references to Zarakanian artifacts and Zarakanian warriors.
It's a badass warrior culture.
Yeah. Like, so I've always taken them to be similar to like the Dothraki in Game of Thrones, like very warlike, very skilled as warriors sort of culture that maybe is not as progressed as other parts of the world. Like they maybe live in tribes or live, you know, as nomads. And again, this is just me extrapolating and getting an image in my head. There's nothing that I've read in the books that describe them.
But I will say they are more progressed in the sense that the women get to be badass.
Well, yeah, I guess in that regard, they are. But I think I took that as more like, that's because all they do is make war and fight people. They don't do anything else. So of course all of them have to be able to fight.
Well, there's some really fun characters. I really dig them. Their whole little triad thing is quite fun.
Oh yeah. 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 Now Zaya and Vea, or no, Taya and Vea.
Taya and Vea.
I guess I have to drink on that one.
Do I have to drink if I didn't fuck it up?
No. I think only I'm supposed to. But Taya and Vea, which is weird. Those aren't even hard names to say, but they're awesome characters. They look great. They have like a really cool look to them, and I like that they speak more in the show than
in the book at all.
Yeah, they don't speak much English or much of the common tongue, so they're, you know, they say a couple words here and there, but they don't have that problem on the show. So
Speaking of people and how they look, I'm loving the costumes of pretty much everyone in this episode. Everyone's outfits are fantastic. I love Borch's outfit, Tanvea's outfit. I mean, even Yaskir's outfit, it's like this red leathery. It's also very dragon-y in nature, which, by the way, there are fanfics out there where he is a dragon.
Really?
Dragon. There's fanfics for everything, Tim.
Are they all dragons or just Yaskir?
Just Yaskir.
Why is he the only one who gets to be a dragon?
Why not?
I mean, well, Why can't Geralt be a dragon?
He'd
be
like, I would read that fanfic. You should
like,
write it.
He'd be like a grouchy, you know, like gruff dragon. And like,
that'd be game. You should write it someday.
I mean,
dip your toe into fanfic, Tim. Do it. One of us.
I mean,
anyway, I'll it wouldn't stop
get past. It wouldn't get past the point like just me exclaiming about how awesome dragons are. It'd be like, you know, Geralt was a dragon and it was the most awesome thing ever.
The end. The end.
Yeah, that would be my. That would be my dragon.
It would do well on Tumblr.
Would it? Okay.
So anyway,
maybe I should write fanfic if it's not easy.
It is and it isn't, but yeah, so everybody's outfits are awesome. I'm loving the costuming.
Mm-hmm.
Yennefer's costume we'll get to later, but it also continues to be fantastic.
Yeah, well, she's always fantastic.
She is.
But okay, so on the subject of Yaskir and on the subject of Taya and Vea, what is going on with him?
He can't like, flirt for shit.
Yeah. Like I thought he's supposed to be this big, you know, Casanova, you know, type character who's always wooing the women of all these towns and villages he goes to, and you know, in the taverns, all the wenches. Like I felt like that's just what he does. He's this big seducer, and like he can't flirt with Taya and Vea. Like it's cringeworthy.
Yeah, you know? I don't know, man. That's like, a weird choice.
Like you know, yeah, it is a very weird choice. Like, you know, it's like your neck is like a
sexy goose.
A sexy goose. I mean, it's funny, but what the hell?
Hey, Sean,
like
that line. We're Sean.
Yeah, but I mean, what like it doesn't fit the character at all to me.
Yeah, it's a little weird.
And I feel like you know, and as we get onto the story, we get more into the story. I'll mention other things, but I feel like this is one of my big problems with this episode. After having watched it a few times, is suddenly Yaskir feels like a different character.
Yeah, me. It's kind of more they're leaning heavily into the comic relief, and it's kind of like the dumbing down of the character a little bit, and having him make some decisions that are kind of like, why is he what now?
Yeah, he almost comes off as pathetic, and it's like he's definitely a more comedic character, and he can be ridiculous at times. But I've never seen him as pathetic, certainly not in the books, definitely not in the game, and not really in the show up until this point. I mean, I guess last episode I was talking about how he was pathetic and going through the
well, that was a little different,
yeah,
extenuating circumstances. But yeah, you know, one of the other things about him that I think is interesting is this is the first time he drops his real name.
Yeah,
and I'm not sure why. Like, what is it about the dwarves that he's suddenly introducing himself with his real name? And then a costuming detail. And he's also got this ring for the first time, which looks like a signet ring, which makes me wonder. Like, the internet and Tumblr in particular has theorized that this is like a family ring, and perhaps his father has passed away, and now he's the Viscount of Dettelettenhof.
Yeah, yeah. I have no idea. I mean, it's as good a theory as any.
But I don't get why he like introduces himself with this full name.
It's odd. It's out of character, kind of out of the blue. And, you know, it kind of fits into this sort of uncertainty as I'm not quite sure what he's doing this episode. I will say the one thing I do like this episode clearly begins with Geralt and Yaskir traveling together. And I think that's kind of cool. You know, like he's now they're a team, and it comes off that way. And even when he does meet these other people, and it was when he meets Borch, and Borch is like heard of like the
legendary white wolf. Yeah, I love that. Borch says, "Your adventures are legend." In the background, Yaskir's like, "You're welcome." Okay. Yeah. Which I like, some competent Yaskir. Like, he's good at his job.
Yeah.
If this fucking dragon, not dragon at all, has heard about Geralt, then like, he's pretty successful at what he does.
Yeah, certainly, and that fits. Like, that's, you know, what I expect to see. But then it just, from that he goes just downhill in this episode, in ways that are very strange to me.
Yeah, but going back to your sexy goose comment, I do have to say I love the face that Henry geese? Cavill. Well, no,
geese are pretty sexy.
That's between you and geese. But what I was trying to say, speaking of sexy, Henry Cavill pulls some really hilarious faces. Like, especially when Yaskir does the sexy goose line, they cut to Henry Cavill and he's got this mug of ale and he's like taking half a sip and he just pulls this face like, what the hell are you doing? It's really great. And I know we've mentioned before how people have complained that show Geralt isn't as verbose as book Geralt.
Yeah.
But I think Henry Cavill has done a great job at communicating what's going on in Geralt's head through expressions and gestures. Mm. And this episode in particular has him serving up some fierce reaction shots. Like every time someone does something weird, they cut to him and he has this solid like WTF facial expression, whether it's Jaskier's sexy goose line or later when they're around the campfire. Like he's serving some great reactions and I'm here for it.
Now, what do you think of the other companion, or what's the word, like the people who were trying to get the dragon?
The
like,
other teams.
The other teams, thank you. Because there are three of them in the show. There's the dwarves and there's the reavers and then there's Yennefer and
Sir Ike.
Sir Ike of Denethlin. I think I might not be saying the city right, but I don't think we drink for city names.
It is Denethlin.
Denethlin. Okay.
Denethlin is how I wrote it out phonetically. So
okay, there's an L in there, but maybe you don't pronounce the L. So
he's probably from Toussaint, aka fake France.
Yeah. What do you think of all those characters?
It's fun. It's fun to get to interact with some more of the non-human characters.
Yeah.
In The Witcher, they've kind of been in the periphery in the background a little bit, but this is really the first time that we're actually interacting with the dwarves.
Yeah, sorry, because we've met elves at this point, but we haven't met dwarves on the show yet.
Yeah, we met one elf.
I had to turn the subtitles on for the dwarves.
Did you?
Yeah. Their accents are so thick. But they're fun character. I like the dwarves. Don't really...
It's Yarpin, right?
Yarpin Zegrin,
I believe? Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. And I don't know any of the other dwarves' names. I don't know if you ever get them, but he's Yarpin Zegrin. And then the Reavers and the lead guy there is Boholt, I believe.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah, I might not be pronouncing that right.
That one I did not write down, so.
Yeah, and I don't know if he has a last name. And then, like you mentioned, Sir Ike of Denethlin is with Yennefer. I like the dwarves. I don't really care for the Reavers, but I don't think we're supposed to. And Sir Ike, I think, is just an idiot.
Yeah, Ike is a dum-dum.
He is.
I think the Reavers are a little, and we'll get more into this when we talk about the book comparison, but the Reavers are a little mustache twirly villains in this.
Yeah.
Which I think works for the story. There's already so many characters that I don't know if you have the time necessarily to develop every single team further.
I mean, they're kind of the villains, but they don't really... You don't really see them do much. Like, if we're getting into problems I have with the episode. but I guess they set it up like they're the ones who are killing people and stealing things. Like when you meet Yarpin, his bag has been stolen.
Yeah, his bag's been stolen.
And he's angry and he immediately says, it's those fucking Reapers.
Yeah.
Or Reavers. And you have no reason to doubt him. I mean, who else would take his bag? You can't imagine Sir Ike or Yennefer. So it probably is them. But why? Yeah, you know, like you never really get into it. And then, you know, eventually Sir Ike shows up dead. And you never fully, I mean, they kind of say
like taking out the competition, I guess.
Yeah, they kind of say it's the Reavers, but like, one, was he really competition? He seemed so stupid. And then you know, like you don't really get anything. It's odd. It's like they're trying to create a narrative when they don't maybe have the space to do it.
You know, one thing I do want to bring up is that we get another little timeline exposition drop here when they have a discussion about the rightful son of Nilfgaard has returned, burning through the south. Yaskier has some line about Queen Calanthe would die before letting him take what's hers. Mm-hmm. So we get a little bit more now that the timelines are getting closer and closer.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, Nilfgaard's out here doing shit, Calanthe. But you might want to do something about that.
But it's interesting because it also holds into what we've talked about in the past about how people underestimate Nilfgaard. Mm-hmm. The only ones in this moment who seem like, in this episode, who seem like they're not, are the dwarves.
Yeah, they know it's up.
Yeah. Like, you know, who is the one who says Queen Calanthe would never let that happen?
Jaskier.
Yeah. And so it's like clearly Jaskier and Geralt aren't all that, you know, concerned about Nilfgaard. I mean, I guess the Reavers wouldn't say if they were or not. but yeah, it just feels more like, once again, people are underestimating Nilfgaard. I guess we talked about these other characters. What do you think of Borch?
I love Borch. So at what point did you realize that Borch was a dragon? Like how far in this first viewing of the episode were you like, oh shit?
I mean, like, I guess I thought something was up when he seems to die halfway through the episode, you know?
Like, yeah.
It just seemed odd for that. But it was probably not until that point.
For me, it was when Geralt tries to monster explain dragons to a dragon. And he's like, oh, what does he say are the rarest? Green or red or black or something.
Black, yeah.
And then Borch comes in with gold dragons are the rarest. I was like, oh, okay. He's a dragon.
Yeah.
And also the line that Tay and Vaya have about he is the most beautiful. I was like, okay, that's interesting.
Yeah. I guess I probably should have figured it out from that line. I just, you know, that line just struck me as a place for laughs when you don't know. And yeah. So I just thought it was kind of funny.
Yeah. You know, I do enjoy that Geralt's trying to dragonsplain to a dragon, though.
Yeah, I guess he does. I mean, he's explaining the dragons to Jaskier because Jaskier says, oh, they don't exist. And,
yeah.
And Geralt was explaining to him. But then, yeah, when Borch says gold dragons are the rarest, he says gold dragons are a myth.
Yeah, in my experience.
But I actually took more what he was saying after that, because he then goes into it would only be the result of
a mutation.
And by my experience, mutations aren't, it's not exactly this line, but it's something like aren't accidental, they're always right. Deliberate. And he's
which
like,
is a weird line because mutations are totally accidental all the time in nature,
but not from his point of view, where they force mutations,
sure, but yeah, in nature in general, like,
yeah,
albino animals aren't deliberate, you know?
I guess it's a little weird line, but I think it, you know, I think it definitely makes sense where Geralt's
coming from.
And then, you know, and then the thing after that where he says, regardless, something like the same thing will happen or happen to them that happened to all things that were too different to survive, they died out, or too different to live, they died out. And which those remarks, which I didn't do a very good job summarizing, but those kind of like hit home to me. And you know, the dragon's planning, just I didn't think of it as that. So I, you know, took me a little time, I guess, you know, before I got the sense that maybe there was more to Borch than he was. But I don't know, I think the first time I had seen this, I'd forgotten about the whole golden dragon conversation by the time, you know.
I love the casting on Borch, and I forgive me, I did not write down the actor's name.
Yeah, I should,
but
as well.
He's not like a big dude, you know. He's got an intimidating personality,
yeah,
but he's not very intimidating physically, and I love that casting.
Yeah,
I love that he's kind of like dwarfed by, no pun intended, by these Arcanian warriors, but then he turns out to be like this giant freaking dragon. It's just a fun little,
well, he's a
dichotomy, you know.
He's an older dragon, like,
yeah,
the idea is, you know, gold dragons are the rarest, he could very well be the last one.
Right. But I just mean the sense of, you know, a dragon's a big intimidating creature and you have his human form is like, nope, I'm just a guy.
Yeah.
Just a guy doing human things. Hello, fellow humans. Don't mind me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just over here humaning.
It's interesting because, you know, in the book, they say that a dragon can take any form, or maybe not all of them, maybe just the golden dragons could take any form that they want. So presumably, if that's true, he could look like, you know, he could be built like Henry Cavill if he wanted to. The TV show does not necessarily go into that level of detail. So it could just be he has a human form, and the human form is, you know, this little older guy. And I, you know, I presume if we met the dragon when he was younger, it would, he would be a younger version of that guy. So are you going to, do you want to say what the dragon's name is? Cause it's not Borch.
Oh, I got it. Are you ready?
Oh, do you have it?
Got it, man. I'm prepared.
Okay.
Villain Trenton Mirth.
Oh my God. This thing has something like what? 14 letters. I don't, you know, I didn't count them.
Here. Hang on. Here we go. Okay. V-I-L-L-E-N-T-R-E-T-E-N-M-E-R-T-H. Villain Trenton Mirth. Thank you.
I lost count.
I've won the spelling bee.
Oh man. I should be drinking to, you know, I'm gonna toast to that one.
Should we talk about Geralt and Yennefer?
Last episode was them meeting. So this is and it's funny because I didn't think about it, but they're only together in two episodes all season long, right?
Yeah.
This episode and the previous one. And so this is not right after that prior episode. Chronologically, it feels like there has been some time.
Yeah, you know. I believe it's been 6 years
okay
from the Jin episode.
So we went from them having sex in this like destroyed house to her kind of giving him the cold shoulder.
And we know from their exposition that they have been meeting up again, on again, off again.
Yeah.
We just haven't seen it on the screen. We get a montage.
Yeah. So what do you think of where they're at? I mean, is it feels like I certainly didn't question it when I was watching the show. I'm like, it's felt sort of natural. And it was kind of funny, you know, like at the beginning, he's going to turn down this mission, hunt. And then the last, you know, group strolls in and it's, you know, it's Ike with Yennefer, and suddenly he's like,
I'm in.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
But before that, Yasker's like, oh no. Yeah. Thank you very much for the food and the mead, fine sir. And we are on our way. And yeah, immediately Geralt's like, we're it. You know?
Yeah.
So, Yennefer, again, her motivations for being on this, it's back to that, you know, wanting a baby thing again, which just at this point, I'm like, come on, you know, like it just, they hit that note too many times. And, she, you know, it just really feels like all she cares about. And I don't think that's fair to Yen. It doesn't feel like.
I also feel like Geralt's not fair to Yen because he's kind of a dick to her about the baby thing. You know, you and I both are like, about the baby storyline, but. Girl's like, no, you'd be a terrible mother. We're sterile for a reason.
Yeah.
None of us should have kids. And you're just like, whoa, dude. Way to project your issues on your girlfriend.
I mean, that's true. I'm not saying he's not doing that. He absolutely is. But like he does say a reason, like he said something like, there are all these reasons why we were made sterile, but one of the kindest was no child deserves this sort of existence. And I thought that was a good point, but you're right. He couches that with all sorts of just, you know, belittling, you know, derisive sort of.
Yeah, he's kind of a dick.
Yeah, yeah. And he's not too cool during that moment. And then he also lets slip, you know, that he has a child surprise, which apparently he hadn't mentioned to her in all this time.
Like the 6 years or whatever it's been.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I could see
why. But he does have an interesting line where he talks about that he's thought about his child surprise a lot.
Yeah.
He kind of says, I've thought about this in great detail, and I'd rather let my child surprise be Bruxa bait than, you know, claim them. So
he has, although part of me feels like, again, this is total conjecture, but I'm like, I think he's like trying to come up with reasons why he shouldn't go get her.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, this would be a horrible life for, you know, a child, which, all right, in fairness, maybe it would be. But I feel like he's kind of trying to come up with whatever excuse makes sense to him so he doesn't have to go take on this responsibility, this destiny of his.
Yeah.
You know, that's one thing is like when you do these time jumps like this series does, you don't really sort of see that progression. You don't get to see the growth. Yeah.
So sometimes stuff can feel very sudden because you're like, okay, we see Yennefer making her choice and then all of a sudden she wants a baby and you're like, well, this is a little awkward.
Yeah. And I would be critical of that, except in fairness, the books kind of do the same thing at this point.
Yeah.
Since they're all short stories, there is a certain amount of time that takes place between all of them. So, you know, it plays out similarly in the books as well.
And I want to reiterate with the Yennefer storyline that I do get that it's about choice and having your choice taken away and being like, I forgot how old she is, gonna be like 20, 19, 20 or something, not having any options and thinking this is it and this is what you have to do. And the choices that you make when you're 19 or 20 aren't necessarily the choices you make when you're 30 or 40 or 50 or so on. So I get that that's what they were trying to go for. I just think they hit the baby thing a little too hard and made it more about like, no, she wants a baby. She wants a child. She wants to have a child, as opposed to like, no, I want the choice to control my life and my fate.
Yeah. You know, Yennefer even says something along those lines to Saya a few episodes ago. So it's clearly there's more to it than just that, but it does. I think because of you only getting these little moments in her story and, you know, and Yen kind of not always being the focus of all of the episodes, it really does feel like, oh my God, she just wants a baby, you know, just like you have all this power and all you want is to be, you know, I don't know. It just hits a weird note for me and it continues to. And I guess the one thing I'm glad for is we're now at the point in the season where, you know, you kind of get away from that. So I'm ready to move on.
Well, I will say that the Geralt-Yennefer relationship does take some positive turns as well in this episode. there were some really fucking romantic lines from Geralt where you're like, wow, yeah. Geralt, I didn't know you had that in you.
Yeah.
Like she has a line where Yennefer says, I can take care of myself. And Geralt says, you don't always have to, which, ooh, my heart. And then later they're together and he has a line that's sent. The moment I dread most every time you leave is when it fades, when you're really gone. Like, that's a fucking romantic line, Tim.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny, in an episode with dragons, for me to say this, but I think my favorite scene in this episode is the scene of Geralt and Yen in the tent together.
Oh my like, God, it's so adorable.
There's a lot I like about that. One, just on a strictly just kind of surface level, I like that it's in this enchanted tent, yeah. You know, like the tent's this little tiny thing, it's on this windy
bigger
hill.
On the inside.
Yeah. And then it goes in and it's, you know, this nice like warm cozy place with a fire and a nice bed,
yeah.
And it leads to like a really kind of sweet scene where he says those lines, and you know, and there's romantic, you know, kissing in bed. And yeah.
And then the fact that she gets to be like cute, she gets to smile and yeah. laugh and be flirty there, and you don't get to see that side of there, Yennefer.
Exactly. There's a moment which I didn't really notice until this last viewing that I watched earlier today preparing for this recording, this episode, where after he falls asleep, there's a moment where she just kind of touches his face,
yes.
Before she does. And you're right. You don't see Yennefer doing stuff like that. It's really sweet. I like
Although
it.
I'm like such a late sleeper. She's doing that. I'm like, how is he not waking up?
Yeah, yeah.
She's really like going to town on his face.
Yeah. But I don't think that would be something you'd want your boyfriend doing to you in bed.
If you fall asleep. Be like, what are you doing?
But I don't know. Geralt strikes me as not a light sleeper. He sleeps out on the path, out in the woods, you know, with monsters around
yeah.
him. He can and sleep through Yen touching his face.
They both stay, Tim.
I know.
They both stay. The whole thing is they each leave each other, and then finally they're together, and they both wake up, and they're both still there. But I have to say, Yennefer, girl, we got to talk about going to bed with your makeup on. It bugged me so much. She's got like this full smoky eye and mascara and the whole thing. I know she's an all-powerful sorceress.
It's a magic makeup. It's enchanted makeup. It doesn't go, it doesn't come off.
Enchanted makeup. It doesn't ruin your skin and get all over your pillows.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's
girl,
my
wash
theory.
Your face. But yeah, that scene is so cute. The fact, and you get the love song. You get the Your Sweet Kiss kind of playing underneath it too.
No, I agree. It's a really sweet moment. And it's unfortunate that, you know,
it all goes to shit
afterwards. Yeah.
Not to go back a little bit to my other beloved OT3, but Yaskier. So I want to talk about the fact that they either just like forgot to age Joey Beatty or they have a grander plan in mind. Like Yennefer has a line where she tells him the crow's feet are new and you're like, cool. The non-existent crow's feet that none of us can see. They do a good job of making him look tired in this episode, like a little older in mannerisms and character, but he's still, you know, he's supposed to be in like 40 something at this point, and he still looks, you know, 32.
And the thing, and this gets into the whole bigger Yaskier conversation, which we'll save that till the end, but like you know, it is a interesting point, because at one point, you know, it could become a problem, because we're in season one of this show.
Yeah.
Presumably, hopefully, it'll go, you know, on for many seasons.
We got at least three.
Yeah, we got at least three. But I'm hoping for more. I'm hoping for, you know, adaptation of the whole thing. In which case, it's like more time is going to pass. This character is, you know, has aging to do. And so he can't be too aged right now, which physically, like you said, he doesn't look like he's old. You know?
Yeah.
The actor certainly doesn't look old. But if you're making him old in the timeline, I don't know, you get to a point where you create a problem for yourself.
Apparently, and I've only heard this secondhand through Tumblr, but in the Hexer series, which was like the Polish live action adaptation of The Witcher, there's a throwaway line where Yaskier's actor once says something like, oh yeah, it's because the elven blood in my family. And that's all they do. And that's all they ever say about it. Like, they don't bother aging him either.
You know, it's a simple solution, but it works. I mean, elven blood would make sense. They should probably incorporate something like that into this show.
Yeah, the showrunner, there was an interview I saw with the showrunner where they mentioned that they just kind of forgot to age him, which I'm honestly like, Did you? Is that a red herring? It seems like kind of a crucial thing to forget when you're dealing with multiple timelines.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I have a lot of questions about Yaskir just in general and the decisions they...
Well, speaking of Yaskir's decisions, what do you think about that conversation between him and Geralt facing the cliff? So this is at the point where Borch has died, not died.
What, refresh my memory. What's said in that one?
So, yeah, Geralt thinks Borch has died, and they're sitting on this scenic panorama. They have this little heart-to-heart, and Yaskir is talking about... Well, first of all, Geralt asks him, like, oh, are you trying to work out your next song? And he says, no, I'm just trying to work out what pleases me. And tries to get Geralt to go to the coast with him. He says, we could head to the coast, get away for a while.
Yeah.
And the Tumblr, you know, my little shipper heart, Tim, it is my deepest hope that I've gotten you watching this show with, like, the slightest of shipper goggles. That scene is like, ooh, okay.
I mean, I don't know that I ship Yaskir and Geralt myself, but I did, I guess if shipper goggles means I pick up on things that I did make note of that. Like, he's trying to, you know, decide what he wants or what. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, what's that a reference to? But then, Geralt takes that and I'm like, well, I know what I want. And
goes to Yennefer.
I'm like, you know, Yaskir may like Geralt, but I don't know. That
there's also a lot of theorizing online because of the ring, like the signet ring. They're like, oh, is this like Yaskir's last hurrah before he goes back home? And also people are theorizing that Lettenhove, because no one actually knows where Lettenhove is, but people are theorizing that it's on the coast and that Yaskir is going to take Geralt home with him. Like, we should go to the coast. These are all Tumblr theories, and I'm here for each and every one of them.
Well, that might be the plan, but it's not what actually happens. So unless they stray from
my OT3 dreams, unless they
stray from the source material, which they're doing, you know, they do a fair amount. So maybe they will. Maybe he will go home with Yaskir at some point. I don't see how, though.
Well, do we want to talk about the actual hunting of the dragon?
Well, a couple quick things worth pointing out. You know, we already said Borch, you know, alluded to the fact Borch dies. Well, we think he
and
dies.
And Taya and Vaya go with him.
Yeah.
So they're on this bridge and the bridge
falls.
That's
what I wanted to bring up. The fucking freaky bridge. All right. Again, for people who don't know me in real life, I have the worst fear of heights. And yeah, that scene, just the minute I saw it. And I will say, this is one part where... It's a little bit different from the book, but I actually think this was a good change because I could visualize exactly what the risk is. And when this bridge collapses, it just feels like the bridge is collapsing. Mm-hmm. You know, this old rickety, if you can even call it a bridge, it's like a board, you know, hammered into the side of a cliff. Anyhow, that part terrified me.
Yeah, for sure.
So after, you know, the big romantic scene with Geralt and Yen, when they come out, they find the dwarves have left them. And so Yen's freaked out and angry and runs them down and casts some spell on them that freezes them, at least some of them, and then runs into the cave and, you know, finds the dragon is there with an egg. And, you know, then Borch reemerges as the golden dragon and
the dead dragon, the dead green dragon that they're hunting.
Yeah, is dead. But Borch then soon reemerges and he's this golden dragon. And I gotta say, you know, talking about things that disappoint me in this
CGI.
Episode. CGI, I don't even know that's the CGI, although the lack of budget is definitely, especially if you're familiar with the story, which we'll get into in that section later on in this podcast, but like, you know, the lack of budget is apparent in this episode, but it's not even so much the CGI for me as it is the design of the dragon. I don't like the design of the dragon. He looks like a golden baby bird, you know, like that's the best way I could, like, you know, with its head is a little too big and his arms are all kind of, you know, gangly and stuff. He's really thin and, you know, I respect that there's a lot of different looks for dragons and I you know, applaud them for trying to give a distinct look to these ones, but it's not either majestic or inspiring or scary or any of the things you know usually think of dragons as being. It just looks kind of awkward and gangly to me, but I don't know, to me it just didn't work. It's another thing about this episode that kind of both surprised and ultimately disappointed me.
The telepathy seemed kind of weird too. Yeah. I don't know. Like, it makes sense that he would be communicating telepathically, but the way they do it, it's just kind of like, oh, and now I'm talking, but my lips aren't moving. And it was a little odd. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some odd sort of choices made. I mean, some of it's from the book, like the telepathy is from the book, but I agree. It comes across as odd here, as well as, you know, kind of, I guess the final battle doesn't come across as odd, but it just, it's so stripped down from, you know, what you might be expecting if you've read the story, that I'd imagine people who were familiar with the books ahead of the episode might have been disappointed by this sequence. You know, like, I'm not even sure exactly. Like, obviously, they're fighting the Reavers. Are they all Reavers that they're fighting in that last scene? Because I know that at the end, Bortz gives the teeth to the dwarves and they go off to the king.
Yeah, it's all Reavers. The dwarves are all frozen on the side of the path.
So have there always been that many Reavers?
In
the show? Like, I don't remember the Reavers being that big of a group. That's why I said we don't.
Surprise Reavers.
Yeah, we don't get many of them. I mean, there are cool moments in this fight. Like, I love, you know, the kiss between Yen and,
oh, and the
Geralt,
and
where she says, or do the sign of Ard sign now. And she kisses him. And, you know,
and she's badass with, like, she's not relying on magic so much.
Yeah.
She's like stabbing people and fighting with swords.
That was
things.
The other thing I was going to say. Yeah. That was the second thing, is I like that we see Yennefer fighting with blades, which we've never seen before. Did she use two blades at one point?
Yeah, she has like a sword and a knife. Like a dagger. So she stabs a dude in the throat with a dagger.
Which Renfri fought with two blades too. So maybe that's a little fetish of Geralt.
Geralt has a type, yeah.
Yeah, he has, you know, he likes girls that can, you know, go double fisting.
Double fisting with some blades, yeah. Speaking of the dragon and the fight and the egg, so we find out that he's actually protecting the egg.
Uh-huh.
Everybody's hunting this dragon because they think it's a monster.
Yeah.
But in reality, it's just trying to protect its baby. Why, Tim? I would argue that it's not a monster at all.
Well, but
in fact, the real monsters are the people trying to murder a sweet baby dragon. It's almost as if the real monster
They weren't trying to kill the baby dragon.
They do, though. The Reaver like goes for the egg, and then Vorch kind of fries him.
Well, the Reavers are monsters.
Which I don't get why the Reaver's going for the egg, but yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he was just hungry. They're thinking, you know, make a good breakfast.
Pretty sizable egg.
Yeah. Yeah, the Reavers are you know, supposedly just these brutal, monstrous people anyhow. So, like, that's fine, you know, that they're monsters. But, I mean, the dwarves weren't going to kill the egg. And, you know, like, certainly.
We don't know that. Vorch is just kind of like, here's some teeth, go away. And they're like, cool, thanks. Yeah. Less work for us.
That's true. They might have been hungry as well. I mean, I don't, you know, this case, I just don't think that. Little kind of theme works, because even Geralt would not call a dragon a monster, and he didn't want even the little, was it
Hurika,
he didn't even want that little thing to be killed, you know. So I guess, I don't know, maybe you could say Ike is
the monster,
yeah, killing the poor little Hurika
and then eating it, like, ooh. I don't know about that choice, buddy.
No. Yeah. And so there's the pretty cool, you know, fight, even though it's disappointing compared to what's, you know, I think in the book. And then it ends with breaking all of our hearts.
Story. Multiple times.
Yeah. What do you think of the ending of this story?
Yeah, it's very sad and heartbreaking. And like I said, in the opening, Yennefer breaks up with Geralt, and then Geralt in turn lashes out at Yaskir. And none of that happens in the actual book. And it's an interesting choice.
Well, Yennefer finds out about
the wish, which, again, we previously established she knows about in the books.
In the books, yeah. And is fine with, you know.
Yeah.
Here she gets upset. And
it makes sense.
Yeah, I get why she's upset. And it's kind of almost Bortz who tells her. He doesn't say that, but he says something. He's like, what does he mean? And
like, how the fuck do you know, Bortz? I guess dragons have magic.
I feel like... Again, this is stuff from the books, but like when telepathy... I do know when telepathy...
Oh, yes.
When they speak in your head, they can read your thoughts as well. So if he's been telepathic this whole time, he's probably been reading Geralt's thoughts. You know, he kind of lets her know that, and she gets really angry, and they both say some awful things, like, he, you know, Well, I mean, they say some awful things to each other, but they're like wonderful lines. Like she has one where it's like, I'll take advice from you about children as soon as you take responsibility for the one you bound to you and then abandoned.
Yeah.
Which I thought was like a great line because, you know, like as a father, you know, yeah it's kind of fucked up. You know, I feel like
kind of what you did, girl. It's yeah. Kind of what you did.
Yeah. But it is kind of, you know, a harsh line considering we want them to be happy and together. Also, Borch kind of makes it clear that that's maybe not going to happen.
Well, that she's never going to regain her womb, he says.
Well, he says, the sorceress will never regain her womb. And though you didn't want to lose her, Geralt, you will.
I would say he lost her right there.
That's what she says. Yeah he already has, or he just did, or something like that.
He definitely makes a mess of it and then continues to make a mess of it by breaking up with Yaskier. What the hell, Geralt?
Well, you know, what the hell? But I would say, what the hell, writers and showrunner, you know, because like
that is a giant departure.
Yeah, huge departure. And I get like in the context of the episode, it's fucked up, but I get it.
Like he's hurting because of Yennefer and now he's lashing out against the only other person that's there and has shown him any kind of like kindness or affection.
Yeah, but it's still a brutal moment where, you know. He just blames.
Yeah, blames her for all of his problems, which, by the way, Geralt, these are problems of your own making, my dude. Like the child surprise.
Yeah.
Yaskier got you to the banquet. You're the one that decided to claim the law. Surprise is a fucking joke, my man.
Yeah, for sure.
Like that is all on you.
For sure. And even the.
Like the dragon hunt. That was like, Yaskier didn't want to do the dragon hunt.
Yeah. Well, and even the you know, the djinn, it was like Geralt looking for the djinn. And then he says,
if life could give me one blessing, it would be to take you off my hands.
Yeah.
What the fuck, Geralt?
No, it's brutal. And I mean, there obviously I do have some issues with this episode, but this is probably my biggest one, which is a huge departure from the source material. But like, Yaskier and Geralt, their whole relationship has been a huge departure from the source material. And I don't know why. I don't quite understand the reasoning behind creating this antagonistic sort of reluctant friendship between Geralt and Yaskier. Maybe they think it's a little more interesting. I don't know. But like, because you only get Yaskier in a few episodes, it just really feels like Geralt's an asshole, and why would Yaskier like even want to be his friend? And then he ends it like this, which is just strikes me as almost cruel.
Yeah.
And
straight up cruel. It's like he's saying, if I have one blessing, it would live for you to go away, you know?
And then you don't see Yaskier again this season. Like I didn't realize that at the end of this. I thought, that's a harsh ending. And then it was like, I think that was one of my first thoughts when I finished the series the first season as a whole, was I'm like, wait, we never saw Yaskier again. You left it like that? Yeah. Really? Like it's bizarre and just not at all in keeping with the source material where they're just friends, they're buddies, and you know, they may be opposites or different, but they're both cool with that. And you know, I don't see what's wrong with that myself. Do you have any thoughts or insight?
Yeah, I think it's weird. And like, this is something we'll talk about a little bit later, but I want to see them being friends.
Yes.
Like, I want to see them actually enjoying each other's company. And you do see hints, like in the djinn episode, you see Yaskier being a much better friend to Geralt than Geralt is, you know. Yaskier is heartbroken about his relationship ending, but still when you see something's up with his buddy, he's like, talk to me, what's going on?
Yeah.
And you never get that from Geralt's side of things. And you just feel like he's this nuisance, but then why would you put up with him for 20 some years if this isn't, you know, if you're not getting anything out of it? So I don't know. I think this is another aspect of the show. And again, I love the timeline, guys. Like I'm a big fan of the nonlinear timeline, but I think this is another aspect of the show that is hurt by the fact that we're just like jumping into random segments of these people's lives and not seeing the bigger picture.
Yeah, it's true, because I just don't understand at this point, presumably because it's been a good number of years
since 20 years.
Yeah. Like, why would Yaskier still be hanging around with Geralt? Like, that's pretty much, you know, that's a lot of what he does.
Unrequited love. No, sorry.
I mean, but why would you like that's a pretty toxic relationship.
Yes,
you
it
know,
is.
I mean, like, it's just, I guess I don't want to get too much into personal stuff, but like you and I have had just conversations just in general about how we don't have time for people that don't have time for us.
Right.
And mm-hmm. like, this feels like a perfect example of that. I know if you were Yasker, you would not be like putting up with this shit.
And it's been 22 years. Yeah. I'm looking at my timeline right now. Yeah. Yasker's 40 here. He was 18 when they met. So.
Yeah. And I feel like even giving your, you know, fan theory credit, if I was in love with someone.
Yeah.
And like, you know, harbored feelings for them and was hope that they'd eventually, you know, return those feelings, but they treated me like this.
Yeah.
I don't think I would even then, I don't think I'd stick around for 22 yeah. years, you know, because we didn't know if we were going to get a season two.
Right. Yeah.
Imagine if it ended like that, yeah. you know?
Oh, so. Yes, you're my baby. Changing the subject. Yeah. So Siri is still in the woods, leaving the woods.
Oh, Siri's in this episode?
Yeah, she is. There's a few people in this episode.
No, I know.
Siri, the Doppler, fake yeah. Mousek, Kahir, or Kahir. I don't know. How is it said? Kahir?
It's. I've heard Kahir.
Kahir?
But they say, I think Kahir.
They say Kahir.
Kahir.
Frangilla says Kahir.
It also sounds like Kahir. I don't know.
At least one of you is wrong, so.
At least one of us is always wrong.
Well, the thing sometimes is, like, both. All right, so here's the thing. Here's a little behind the scenes stuff. I listen to the audiobooks and the reader says Kahir. But I do think Frangilla says Kahir.
Yeah, she says Kahir.
Yeah.
Kahir.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's a roundabout way of saying that he is in this episode and actually gets some screen time.
Yeah.
So backing up a bit, we mm-hmm. have Dara and Siri and they're leaving the forest
yeah.
with Doppler Mousek. And poor mm-hmm. Dara is doing the Lord's work.
Yeah.
Because you got to wonder at some point, is he like, why am I keeping this dumb girl alive? Every decision she makes is the worst decision.
Yeah.
Poor Dara.
Uh-huh.
I feel for you, Dara. So like basically they realize he's a Doppler. Siri screws up. The Doppler escapes. Siri goes running through the woods. And then there's a fake out because uh-huh. you think that Kahir has captured Siri, but it turns out to be the Doppler.
Yeah. Who was transformed into Siri.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, which doesn't make any sense to me, I gotta
it was
say.
Cool.
You're right. Okay, so you get more Siri in this episode than you have in a lot of the other episodes. And not every part of her story here is terrible. But like, let's back up to the scene prior to that, because I have a real issue with the scene prior to that. So basically, you know, Dara is saying something to Siri, like, you know, something odd about
yeah.
this guy. You know, I don't remember exactly what he's saying, but he's basically saying there's, you know, trust your, remember what they said in the fucking, you know, elf forest or whatever, you know, Brokkola, dryad forest, like, you know, like trust your, ask the right questions and there's something yeah. wrong about the weird about this guy. So Siri then asks him some questions about Skellige, where he's from, and, you know, if he misses it and if he misses the cold, and, you know, and this guy gives the wrong answers. And, oh, yeah, I miss it very much. Like, you said you hated the cold. Anyhow, he transforms into his true self. Like you said, you see it. And there's like a little bit of a fight between Dara and Siri and this Doppler. And they get the Doppler, you know, they get him down,
yeah.
you know, with like a, you know, a silver knife at his neck. And Siri says to Dara, you know, kill him. And he's like, what? No. You know, and then she's like, well, then I will. And then he gets away in the process. All right. Look, I'm not a violent person in real life, but I also believe context is everything. And this is a different world and a different way of life than, you know, than where we are in our reality today. So this guy is going to kill you. You had him.
Yeah.
You had him. And why are, like, this happens in fantasy and just in movies in general all the time. Like, no, wait a minute. And then they get away or they turn the table.
Well, I can see him wanting to take a minute to, like, question the dude or get some more information as to what's going on.
I didn't get the sense that that's what he wanted. I got the sense, like, wait, kill? No.
Well, he's a kid. He's still a kid. I don't know. I feel like if you're telling someone, you should be prepared to do it yourself, which she tries to do, but then fucks it up. But
I mean,
I don't know. If somebody was like, if somebody just told me, kill this guy, I'd be like,
don't
no.
put a knife to someone's neck if yeah. you're not ready to.
You are violent, Tim.
I mean, seriously. like this is kill or be killed. And, you know, Siri realizes it. I don't know why Dara doesn't. Like, so you seem to be very pro-Dara.
I was the other's way. Yeah, I was like, whoa, Siri, all of a sudden wanting to kill this guy. What's up with that?
No,
like,
that's no. I am a totally team Siri here. Like, she seems to get, like, what sort of stakes they're
playing. I mean, to be fair, she did see her entire family and kingdom, like, burn.
Yeah.
So.
And she seems to get what sort of stakes they're playing for here. You know, now, like you said, we do get a really cool moment with the Doppler and Kahir.
And Kahir, like, cottons on when Doppler Siri doesn't take the silver cup yeah. to, like, drink from. Yeah.
And then he transforms, so he looks like Kahir, and we have, like, basically a Kahir on Kahir fight.
Yes.
You know, and which is a pretty good fight. So, you know, you do get that as a result.
And then he, like, straight up murders a ton of people. And Fringilla has that line about a simple test of silver would have sufficed.
Yeah, he says, Kahir goes, still at the ring.
Yes.
No, it's great. There are some great lines, but this fucking Doppler gets away.
Well, not at the end. No, he kills him. He kills everybody in the bar. That's why Fringilla is like, she says, oh, a simple test of silver. You could have just tested these people to see who the Doppler
is. I miss that.
Kahir just totally murdered the entire bar.
I miss that whole
all those people
thing.
Are dead in the background because Kahir just went stabby stabby.
Okay, I totally didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
Like, I just thought he went around questioning people and stuff like that.
No,
and
he
then,
just murdered, rather than, like, just test to see who the Doppler was, he just straight up murdered everybody.
Okay, then the steal at the ready line makes a lot more sense now. But, like, I didn't pick that up at all. I just thought he went around questioning and ultimately the Doppler got away, and that was why he was
No, he, like, just murders an entire tavern full of people.
Oh.
Including the Doppler.
Yeah, that's pretty harsh. But you know, you do get that cool scene. But then, you know, the next time you cut to Siri, you see, like, the real Siri, you see her and she's, like, tied up at a tree. And Dara cuts her free, but, like, that makes no sense. What was this Doppler going to do? He somehow gets the better of them after he slips out from under their knife, ties up Siri, and then he's like, oh, I guess I'll go back and have a chat with Kahir, you know, just for lols, you know, and leave Siri by herself.
Yeah, because he gets that there's something going on with her and it's more than what he was told. But yeah, that's a weird
It makes no sense whatsoever narratively. And it gets him then, I guess, killed. And Siri ultimately escapes, which, okay, good. We want Siri to escape. I mean, I'm not saying I wanted him to kill Siri, but it's just, like, as far as motivations go, it makes no sense whatsoever to me. It's just this whole Siri storyline just, I think, goes off the rails until the last couple episodes. And, you know, this episode narratively just makes no sense on that side. I have no idea what they're doing with Siri here.
Do we want to jump to our next segment, which is the Care Moron of the episode?
Well, first we got to talk about the whiskey.
Oh my gosh. I have been drinking so much of it, Tim, that I totally skipped our whiskey segment.
We skipped the whiskey segment.
How dare I?
Yeah.
Can you ever forgive me?
So I you know, I'll forgive you of almost anything. You're drinking the whiskey. That's the important thing. What do you think of it?
I like it. It's very smooth.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's interesting.
You said it was rice?
It's distilled from rice. And like I said, this one is a Japanese whiskey, but I have a little bit of information about it, just, you know, for conversation. So Kikori, this whiskey, it's a product of So Spirits, which is run by Anso Woods. She's a Korean-American entrepreneur who is one of the only female business leaders in the realm of Japanese whiskey. So
nice.
Let's hear it for awesome women.
Yeah, you go, girl.
Yeah. Now, Anso Woods is a Korean-American businesswoman, and I think she's actually located in LA. As a child, she used to accompany her father, who's a professor at the University of Illinois, around the world, and Japan was a frequent stop. Over time, she fell in love with Japanese culture, a love that still persists to this day, and helped inform the creation and launch of Kikori whiskey. And it, like I said, it was distilled in Japan and was developed along with a master distiller in Kumamoto. But the idea and distribution were the brainchild of a Korean-American woman, making this a truly international creation. So it's interesting. It's very gentle and almost floral on the palate, would be what I'd say. It also almost feels like, because it's distilled from rice, it does taste like a whiskey to me, but it, like, almost feels like a mashup with, like, a soju or something like that, would be what I would think. Yeah, producer Sean, do you have any thoughts on this whiskey?
I do. I've never had a rice distilled whiskey before. I do like Japanese whiskey. They tend to mostly just taste like really great blended scotches. So this is one of the more unique ones that I've ever had. Very, very earthy on the front. Definitely a lot of honey throughout and like a little bit of licorice on the end. I like it. It's different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you like Sean's description? You asked me and I'm like, it's very smooth. And Sean's like, oh, I taste notes of honey on the palate.
Yeah.
What can I say, kids? I bleed brown.
Yeah. That's why Sean's the right producer for this podcast. I at least got floral from it, you know.
Well, the rice does give it an interesting taste. Uh-huh. There's almost like it's smooth, but it's also got a little bit of a sharpness to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very interesting.
And it is like, especially when you look at it.
Sean's coming back. Yeah. Mike, Sean.
Especially when you see it in the bottle, it's the golden color.
Yeah, it's really pretty.
Really nice. Yeah, it's a really pretty whiskey.
It definitely is. And I was especially interested to try it because my favorite gin in the world comes from Japan and is distilled from rice, Kenobi. Hmm. And yeah, in the hierarchy of spirits I love to pour into myself, whiskey's number one, gin is number two. Hmm. So.
Oh, interesting. I'm not a big gin drinker. Valerie's more of one. Yeah. That's interesting if this is somewhat gin-like, because I do like this.
So. Yeah, it's good. It's a really interesting pick. And the bottle design is also beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. Go to our Instagram. You can see a picture of the bottle or else, you know, hopefully you can find it in your local liquor store. But it has on the reverse of the label, the inside of the label, it has Japanese kanji. That is the story of Visu, the woodsman that I mentioned that the whiskey is. Kind of was the inspiration of the whiskey.
Thanks for that, Tim. Yeah. And Sean as well.
Yeah.
Classing this joint up a bit. All right. I jumped the gun before.
Okay. Now we're ready.
Now we're ready for the Caramoron of the episode.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like we're all picking the same person, but I've been wrong before.
I think so.
All right, Tim. Who are you picking?
Fucking Sir Ike of Dennis Lehane, or however you say that.
Yep.
Sir Ike. I mean, he's kind of the obvious choice in this episode. He's just an imbecile.
So dumb.
Yeah. Killing that like poor little monster and then eating it.
And then getting the shits.
Getting the shits.
And then dying.
And dying. His story is kind of a sad and pathetic one. So.
And also trying to flirt with Yennefer, but not.
Was he flirting with
you? He wasn't necessarily flirting with her. She was flirting heavy with him, which I also love. We didn't talk about that. That was super funny.
Oh, really?
Where she was like leaning in heavy, and every time she tried to flirt with him, Geralt would be in the background pulling yet another face. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, but I kind of feel like, you know.
It was funny. I mean, she was doing it on purpose to like neg him, but.
It was funny, but it was also like, you know. Like, he was such a ridiculous character that she was just making herself look bad, too.
But I think it was hilarious. I think she was doing it on purpose to, like,
maybe,
play him up.
But I don't think it was fully working. Like, I mean, it was working maybe on Geralt, but it's like, I don't know. Everyone else was just like, really? This guy?
Sir Ike, or Caramoron. Do we have anything else to say about him? Not really. He's kind of there.
I mean, we'll talk about him when we get to our off the path section, but.
Well, speaking of.
Yeah.
Our next section is off the path. Well, differences in the IP.
I guess we do. I guess we do have more to say about him. So yeah, this is like a hard one to even get into this section because we don't want to go on and on and on. But there's so many differences, I feel like, between this story in the book and the show. I just kind of have down the broad strokes. If you want to go into detail about other things that I don't have on my list, obviously you're more than welcome to. But like the biggest, you know, like, I think the one to start with is just the characters. There are more of them in the story. So you have the same characters. You have, obviously, Geralt and Yasker and Yen, and you have Sir Ike, but he's very different. He's, and I kind of like him in the story as well. In the story, he's not an idiot. I mean, not really. He's like a knight, and he's chivalrous to a fault because it ends up costing him. But like, he's a knight who also has made it his duty to kind of rid the world of monsters that could harm people or hurt people. But and Geralt knows him and kind of respects him, but also hates him because he basically does what Geralt does for free.
Yes, you know? He's undercutting the market.
Yeah, yeah. But Geralt respects him because he's good at it. Like, he's actually, you know, a pretty good fighter. But you know, yeah, he's making his job harder. So he's kind of like a rival in some ways to Geralt. He almost, I guess he comes off a little buffoonish because he's always all, oh, I must stay pure and chaste and, you know, yeah, like live by my chivalric code. But he's also, you know, he's not an idiot to the point that he is in the show. And he's actually a pretty good fighter. Of course, he still gets killed by the, or almost killed by the dragon.
But not the same way that he does in the show.
Yeah.
Which is played more for comedic effect.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he doesn't even fight the dragon in the show. In the book, he makes it to the dragon and is like, agrees. So I think the dragon agrees he challenged someone in combat, and and Ike steps up and tries to, you know, I guess joust him, and ends up getting nearly killed. And to what is it? Villain
you want to try that, Tim? You want to try it again?
Well, let me, I can say it, but I just, villain Tretenmirth.
Pretty good.
Yeah. And to his credit, he spares Ike's life. He doesn't kill him. He's like, oh, you should probably go get him. He's, you know, he's down. But he lets them like clear him off. So there's that. And then, you know, the dwarves are largely the same. I mean, you obviously there's more of them, but then you kind of get to know the Reavers a lot.
Yeah, the
more.
Reavers are not like the violent horde that they are in the show.
They certainly talk, you know, a lot more. And they're, you know, they're good at killing dragons and killing, you know, like that's kind of what they do. They're just, I guess, a lot more personable and like more pragmatic. Like they agree, there's a deal that they cut between all of them. Like, you know, the people who kill the dragon would get more of the hoard or something like that. You get the sense that they're not so underhanded. They're not quite so villainous, and they're just good at what they do. So you got the Reavers and you got Ike being different. And then there's another character. He's a sorcerer. And God, do you have his name?
I don't. I failed you. I'm sorry.
Oh, his name is... Oh God! Because I haven't heard this.
Eagerly await this.
Dorgray.
Sure.
Like he's another sorcerer, Dorgray. Pretty sure that's it. It's just written. I don't know how to. I don't know how to say it. Producer Sean is pointing at me. Anyhow, he's an interesting character in that he wants to save the dragon. He actually wants to save all the monsters. Like he does not like what Geralt does, because he feels like these monsters and, you know, humankind are like all in this sort of ecosystem that needs to be maintained, this sort of balance. And, you know, he's completely gone from this episode. He's not in it at all. And I think it's understandable in just, you know, the need to condense the story, but it's disappointing as well, because I think he is an interesting character. And so he's gone. And then the other one who's also in the story, who's not in the episode, is the king.
Right.
Nidamir is actually on the mission, on the hunt with all these groups in the book, and he's not in the TV show. And he has like a regent. I think his name is Gilenstern, and he's a pretty big supporting character as well in the story. So you got all these characters who aren't in the TV show. So that's I'd say one difference.
You know, another difference that I really enjoy is that Borch is so much more of a troll. Like, he can't be a dragon, but he trolls.
Oh, really?
There's a whole scene where he takes out a bridge, and he's kind of telling Geralt beforehand, like, hey, you might not want to go across that bridge.
That's
and Geralt's like, what do you mean? And he's like, never mind.
You know, you get a lot more of just him and his sort of interactions with Geralt.
Yeah, where's my foursome in the bathtub, Tim?
So in the story, after Borch meets Geralt, and they deal with those people who wanna shortchange him, they go to a pub and they eat and drink quite a bit.
Order everything on the menu, essentially.
Because Borch has a lot of money, since he's a dragon and all dragons have hordes. And so basically Geralt gets to know Borch pretty well. He gets to know Taya and Vea pretty well. And you find out one of them, or both, I can't remember.
Or all,
kind of like are interested in Geralt and like him. And this whole sequence ends with all of them taking a bath together and Borch asking which of the two Zarakanians Geralt prefers. So we don't ever find out the answer to that question, actually.
One of them is very flirty with him later, and I forget which one it is. I didn't write it down. And the other first kind of like, what's this about now?
Yeah.
It's like, whistle and walk away, whistle and walk away.
I'm imagining he picked her, but you don't, you know, you cut away. You don't
in my heart, it was a foursome in a bathtub. Oh, I think it's me otherwise.
I mean, they clearly were all bathing together. Yeah. So maybe it was a big foursome in the bathtub. But yeah, Geralt hooks up with one or possibly all of them, which, if you would allow me a little tangent.
Of course. What is this podcast if not a loosely tethered together collection of tangents?
Okay. So, you know, we know Borch is a dragon, which makes me think like, okay, I mean, I don't know if I would want to turn into an animal if I could, if I had it within my power to change from being a human into another animal. I don't know if I'd want to do that. Maybe I would just, you know, for kicks, because what would it be like to be a dog or a cat or, you know, a monkey or something like that. But what I don't think I'd want to do is turn into a dog or a cat and then fuck another dog or a cat. Like, I just don't think that's what I'd want to do, because as a human, I have no attraction to animals other than other fellow humans. And I can't imagine dragons do either. Like, actually, he even says at one point, dragons find humans to be kind of disgusting, or, you know, like vile creatures.
Except for him.
But does it go as far as actually wanting to sleep? Apparently it does. But like, what is that saying about Borch? That's, you know, like, kind of like, you know.
I don't know. I feel like a dragon and a human is more in line with each other than like what? A person or, yeah.
The dragons are like giant fucking lizard things.
Yeah,
like,
but I mean, they have
he eats a human
form
later in the story.
And they still talk.
Like, have you ever like wanted to fuck
see
something that
I'm
you
not
eat?
Gonna listen.
Like, it's just it's a weird area when you think about it. So I'm just gonna put that out there.
You know,
the
you said
that
you had a tangent. This is not where I saw this tangent.
Well, you know, we've been drinking a lot of Kikori at this point.
Gosh.
Okay. It's clear I've left you a little bit speechless.
Just a smidge, which is hard to do, my friend.
So moving on, other differences in
moving
the story.
On.
I mean, there's a lot of difference in the story, but the other big one I would say is the ending of the story. We touched on this when discussing the episode, but I guess the ending, the word I would use, the ending of the story is much more epic than the ending of the TV show. Like, ultimately what ends up happening is a lot, kind of not too different. Yennefer and Geralt end up actually trying to protect the dragon against, you know, the dwarves and the reavers, and end up between the two of them, plus Vea and Taya and the dragon, they end up like actually, you know, fighting all of them off. Ultimately, there's like some kind of key differences with, you know, villain Trenton.
I love that you keep trying.
I keep forgetting his name.
I believe in you that one day you will get it.
Villain Trenton Mertz. You know, God, that name, Villain Trenton Mertz. You know, his whole story is a little bit different, because you have this in the story, it's the dragon's alive. The green dragon isn't dead. It basically leaves the living dragon with him, and you find out at the very end that Villain Trenton Mirth is actually kind of like a dragon witcher.
Yeah.
Like, that, you know, as the dragons have been getting killed off, they found the need for someone to sort of protect them from human, and he's become that. And so they call this, you know, they call him this dragon witcher when they're in great need. And I thought that was really interesting, since he clearly has a bond with Geralt.
Kind of law of surprise the baby dragon
a little bit, yeah. Which I think is really sort of fascinating, you know. And then ultimately you learn this, Geralt and Yen reunite.
Yeah, they kind of reconcile
At the end of the story, because they were completely at odds through most of the story. So they reconcile at the end, and you have this great moment where the dragon's flying away, and you know, and Geralt, I think it ends with him saying something like, you know, Vea or Taya, whoever it was, you know, she was right. He is the most beautiful. Yeah. And I thought that was a great note to end on. It's different. I understand why the show made the changes that they did. I like the story, I think, better. My question is, and I know there's no real answer to it, is, you know, should they have adapted this story considering how much they cut, how much they had to pare it down, and how much they sort of added to it with this, you know, everyone breaking up with each other at the end. It just, it's not, you know, it's a very different sort of story. You know, there are fun moments, so.
I thought it was a fun story overall. I still enjoyed it. Yeah, it's different, but it's a fun little romp. There's some really funny bits, and no Dragon Force, I'm in a bathtub, but we'll take what we can get. Well, I think it's time for our next segment, the hmm count.
How many hmms?
How many hmms? We did not check ahead of time to see if we're on the same page.
Should we just go with it?
Yeah, let's go with it. Ready?
Eight, yeah.
Yay!
Yeah, that's what I had, eight.
There were a lot in this one.
There were, yeah. Geralt was very hmmy in this episode. Quite a bit with his scenes with Yennefer. I think there was maybe like one or two in the tavern at the beginning. But yeah, fair amount.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
All right, Geralt.
Geralt's very, very vocal with his hmms in this episode.
He was. Lots of hmms. Yeah. Very vocal in general in this episode.
He was
more
talkative.
He used his words. Good job, Geralt. Before we get into our final segment, it's time for a surprise segment.
Oh, surprise segment.
I have a surprise segment for you.
Okay.
I almost like said that without slurring through it. Okay. So I am going to present to you my TED Talk on the lyrics of Her Sweet Kiss. Which is the finished song of Jaskier's that is at the end of the episode during the credit sequence.
Okay.
And this is the thematic. We hear the melody throughout, like Yennefer and Geralt's scenes.
I know there's the word Garrotter in it.
There
is
the
weird,
word Garrotter in
which
it.
Is which is a weird word in a love
talk
song.
About. But the interesting, see, I'm glad you said love song. Because the interesting thing about this is even though the melody is played during the romantic Geralt Yennefer moments, the song itself is not necessarily a love song because it's called
Sweet Kiss, right?
It's called Her Sweet Kiss, but it's about how her sweet kiss is kind of like poisonous and ruins things. Yeah, there's some drama here. And also, putting on my shipper hat, there are three different people being talked about in this song.
Is there?
Yeah, if you listen to the lyrics, which I have printed out in front of me, Tim, they talk about, there are three different pronouns. There is a you that's being sung to, there is a her, and there is an I. So the narrator of the song kind of jumps around in who they're addressing.
Are you going to sing it?
I am not going to sing it, but I will break down some of the lyrics.
She hasn't had enough whiskey.
No.
You have to drink.
Well, I'll have to drink then. I trust our podcast listeners do not want to hear that. So they can hear Joey Beatty sing it. He sings it far more beautifully than I ever
will. Valerie, you're not giving yourself enough credit. She actually has a pretty good singing voice. But okay.
Well, all the same, I am not a bard. So the lyrics start, the fair sex they often call it, but her love's as unfair as a crook. It steals all my reason, commits every treason of logic with naught but a look. So first you listen to this and you think, okay, it's like this guy and he's singing about his lady love and how she's you know, enchanting him and stealing all of his reason. A storm raging on the horizon of longing and heartache and lust. She's always bad news. It's always lose-lose. And now here's where it gets interesting. So tell me love, how is that just? So the love right there is a direct address, whereas the hers are not. Uh-huh. So he is singing about a her to a person. Mm-hmm. So there's three people happening in this song.
Yeah.
But the story is this, she'll destroy her sweet kiss, her sweet kiss. Wow, it's fun reciting lyrics after you've had some whiskey, guys. But the story
is
this.
It'd be easier if you sung.
No.
Her sweet kiss.
And then here we go. Here's where it gets really interesting, right? Her current is pulling you closer and charging the hot and humid night. The red sky at dawn is giving a warning. You fool, better stay out of sight. I'm weak, my love, and I am wanting. So the narrator is the narrator's point of view. Again, he's addressing the love and he's saying, I'm weak and I'm wanting, where previously he was saying you were dealing with her.
Yeah.
If this is the path I must trudge, I welcome my sentence, give to you my penance, Garrotter, jury and judge. Now, in the first episode with Maroka, remember our friend Maroka?
Uh-huh.
She has an introductory scene with Geralt where she's talking to him about his name. So Maroka basically says, like, oh, Geralt, like, Garrotter. Like, she has a line where she compares his name to the word Garrotter.
Yeah.
And here we have, I give you my penance, Garrotter, jury, and judge. So, yeah, like I said.
Wait, say that again. She compares his name?
His name. She's like, oh, Geralt, like Garrotter. Yeah, she really? Says that. Which is nothing
first
like Garrotter.
Yeah, it's nothing
she
like
She says her name's like Maroka, like milk, which
yeah,
is not
she's
the same.
A weird fucking kid.
Yeah, right? But so the point being that there are three different people in the song. Hmm. It is not a longing love song from one person to another. The narrator of the song jumps around with who he's addressing, with you, her, and I. Uh-huh. It's not a song about an ill-fated love affair between the narrator and the her. This is the narrator wanting the other person, aka the you, the love, and warning them about their toxic relationship with the her while still pining for that person that's being addressed.
So your point is it's Jaskier singing this to Geralt about
yeah.
his toxic relationship
yes.
with Yen?
Yes.
So that's what you...
That's what this song is about.
Okay.
Yeah, there are different pronouns, my dude. Different pronouns. Three of them.
Yeah. That's actually pretty fascinating.
And you don't necessarily have to view it with shipper goggles, like with the unrequited love, although, you know, he says, I'm weak, my love. And by the way Joey Bates sings this, you know, talking about him singing, he has this little, like, voice kind of crack. He's got this emotion when he sings it. It's really good.
But that begs a question. Do you actually think Geralt and Yen's relationship is toxic?
To an extent, yeah.
You do. Mm-hmm. But you like. You romance Yen.
I romance everyone with everyone.
You didn't romance Triss.
I romance Triss to an extent, but yeah. No, it's...
if you could have romanced them both, you would have.
True that.
Yeah.
Thruples for everyone. Okay. But yeah, I mean, I think they have a very hot and cold, on again,
yeah.
off again, push and pull
yeah.
kind of relationship. And from the Jaskier's point
they
of view...
That's true.
Yeah, it's like she storms into town. She messes things up. His friend's sad whenever she leaves, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like this sweet love song. It's somebody kind of talking about like a toxic relationship between these two characters.
But it sounds like such a sweet
love
song.
Oh, and I love
song.
The melody. And I love the instrumental.
How does the melody
it.
Go again, Val?
I'm not doing it, Tim. But I really, really adore the melody. I love the instrumental version, which I think is called Every Time You Leave, if you listen to the Witcher soundtrack. It's a great track, and I love it underscoring their relationship. But yeah, it's definitely a different vibe, and sometimes people overlook the lyrics and don't pick up on all the nuance in the song. So anyway, that is my TED Talk about the three pronouns in Her Sweet Kiss, thus ends surprise segment.
I tried, listeners. I tried to get her to sing. She actually can sing.
Nope, not right now, she can't. She can't even say Geralt's name right.
Crossroads of Destiny, and we are talking about, like, well, it's probably not a huge surprise since we've been talking about the relationship all episode, but Jaskier and Geralt.
Yes, and to recap Crossroads of Destiny, if you like six episodes, what episode are we on? Six, seven,
yeah,
eight, six.
People
if
should
six
know by now.
In, you should know by now, but yeah, Crossroads of Destiny is just our hopes and dreams for the next season.
What
things
we're
we'd
looking,
like to see come to fruition.
Yeah. And also what we're looking forward to just seeing in general. But hopes and dreams in this case in particular, because we want, you know, we want some, you know, reciprocity. Like we want to see this friendship
yes.
blossom between Geralt and Jaskier, because it's fucking there in the books. Like
yeah.
I don't know what's going on with this.
I want an apology. I
yes.
want Jaskier to get an apology from Geralt for
I mean,
all that shenanigans on top of the mountain.
Yeah, I mean, so looking ahead in the books without going into too much detail, Jaskier ultimately becomes a really important part of the narrative, the story. He's part of Geralt's group, crew, and you know, like, yeah, he's a core character in these books. And so if the show is going to stick to that storyline, they have to bring him back into Geralt's fold. And I don't think this, like, you know, reluctant friend, this antagonistic sort of friendship, this toxic friendship works. You got to get past that. And I'm hoping to get past that. In season two.
Same.
I'm hoping, you know.
I want to see them actually liking each other and enjoying each other's company and Gasp being friends and friendly to each other.
Yeah, I really do hope we see that. I don't know. Like it's just weird. They're so good friends. They're bros in the book. And it's a different dynamic, you know, like there are some aspects of Dandelion's persona that, I don't know, I certainly know
oh,
you don't
such
like
a
as
cad,
yeah. Yeah, I know you don't like as much, and even I would say I'm like, you know what, he doesn't need to be quite so skeezy at times, but it just, the fact that like their friendship is never in doubt is something that I hope we can get to in this series, and I hope, you know, we get there sooner rather than later, because especially after, now what has it been since season one ended, like, you know, and when we're recording this, like, are we at 2 years now?
Yeah, or? It's about 2 years.
Yeah, it's 2 years of them not talking to each other. You know, I need some sort of, you know, reacquaintance,
some sort of resolution.
Yeah, and
apologize, Geralt, fucking dweeb.
So with that,
yeah, I think we're done.
Yeah, like I said, I certainly had a lot to say about this episode. I mean, dragons, man. What dragons. Can I say?
Dragons and bathtubs.
Yeah. So with that, we're now officially in the home stretch. Two more episodes in season one.
Yeah. And season two right around the corner.
Right around the corner from where we're recording right now. All right, guys. I'm going to kill this little bit of whiskey I have left. And we will see you on the next one.
Cheers.
Whiskey with Witcher is a Malcontent Media production by Tim Beadle and Valerie Petrarca. Our producer is Sean Farina. For updates, pics, and behind-the-scenes shenanigans, follow us on Twitter at Whiskey Witcher and on Instagram at Whiskey with Witcher. Want to express your undying love for Roach or recommend a good whiskey? Email us at whiskeywithwitcher@malcontent.media. Who knows, we might even get drunk enough to read your email in a future podcast. If you like what you've heard, toss us a proverbial coin by rating and reviewing this show on Apple Podcasts and subscribing wherever podcasts are downloaded. Cheers!
I think we've exhausted the dragon hunt side of things.
I mean, I could talk about dragons all night, but we don't want to do
that. I know. I don't, for sure. No offense, Tim, but...
Oh, but...
I know dragons.
I haven't even talked about how awesome undersea dragons are.
God help me.